changes to the government ethics laws. It's a rather lengthy bill, and because of that, we provide you with the staff measure summary from the Senate Rules Committee on Rules, where the bill was, and had several hearings, as you can see from the staff measure summary. In addition, we provided you with a section-by-section analysis of the bill, so that if you wanted a summary of it, you can just check that section-by-section analysis. Basically, the reason the bill is in Ways and Means is that it has some blanks in it regarding the funding mechanism for the Government Standards and Practices Commission in the future. This bill would basically turn the GSPC budget from a general fund budget, which it is now, to a other fund budget beginning in the 09 biennium. And the way it would do this is by charging municipal local government entities a fee based on the municipal audit law. And that law right now is a structure where the Secretary of State collects a filing fee on all municipal corporations, which covers just about all local government entities. And this fee is for a audit report that is supposed to be filed with the Secretary of State annually. The fee is based on a sliding scale based on the entity's budget. And in current law, it's a minimum of $20 for small municipal corporations, ranging up to about $400 for the largest municipal corporations. The bill would also have GSPC charge state agencies for a share of their budget using an assessment based on FTE, I believe. As I mentioned, this all starts for the 09-11 biennium. All of that information is in the first three sections. After that, it begins to go into the changes to the ethics laws. Section 4, for example, includes lobbyist reporting requirements in the lobbying regulation statutes. It requires quarterly reports, and lobbyist entities need to file quarterly. It makes some changes to the statement of economic interest that all government appointed government officials are required to fill out. It makes changes to civil penalties, subsequent employment of legislators after they leave session. It makes changes to the gifts and financial gains statutes. The other fiscal item in the bill that the co-chair's budget has accommodated to some extent is the requirement that beginning in January of 2010, all of these reports that are required to be filed by lobbyists and government officials need to be filed electronically and available to the public in an electronic or basically on a web basis, access through the internet. And the co-chairs have set aside about $750,000 as a placeholder to implement that electronic filing system. The Government Standards Practices Commission is in discussions with the DAS, information technology people, regarding how that system should be structured and when it could be implemented. And I believe we'll have additional information about that in a couple of weeks that can be worked into the budget.
And one additional item that is currently on your plate this morning is the proposed amendments, a proposed amendment by the League of Oregon Cities to make some special dispensations for public officials, type of thing. And we won't be discussing particularly that amendment today, nor trying to move the amendment today. We'll wait until we get to a subsequent work session on this bill. One of the major reasons for waiting is, let's say, fiscal doesn't have the numbers to fill in the blanks ready to go yet. So we just want to get the bill out here and get it in your packet, and make you aware of, you know, what is coming down the line. And I think we're also to look at some public hearing or public testimony on that. Has anyone signed up at this point,
Rob? No, I believe no one has signed up.
Is there anyone who wishes to speak on the bill at this particular point? We'd be happy to entertain your... Do any of the members have any questions on the bill at this point?
Actually, Mr. Chair, I do.
Senator Wilson, excuse me, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can on Section 2829, the Legal Expense Trust Fund. It says that the public official is not allowed to solicit money for the trust fund. How would monies accumulate in that trust fund if the beneficiary of that trust fund was disallowed of soliciting for it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, I am not sure. Perhaps the Mr. Burson from the Government Standards and Practices Commission is here. Perhaps he could address that for you. I didn't attend all of the hearings in the Senate Rules Committee, and so I am not sure what kind of a discussion occurred about that aspect of the bill.
I think he's looking as we're speaking, wondering whether he has... are you proposing an answer? We've had expert testimony coming from counsel there. For the record, please.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Wendy Johnson, Deputy Director of the Oregon Law Commission. This Legal Defense Fund, Trust Fund whole section is copied from another of the Law Commission's recommendations on this subject, so I think I can fill in the details. Congress has pretty much the same type of process that congressmen are not allowed to do the solicitation. It's sort of like a campaign. Many judges don't actually personally solicit for funds, and it would operate the same way that you could have your friends do the soliciting or your trustee would do the soliciting, but it's to separate that wall and to not allow you to actually do the soliciting for your own legal defense fund.
So you would be allowed to solicit your friends to solicit for you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It strikes me that, you know, this... I found these ethics laws to be very necessary, very confusing, and written in the most convoluted fashion possible. And it would certainly seem to me that these... Senate Bill 10 could be rewritten in a fashion that is understandable without having an advanced degree in law. Perhaps I'm just dense, but I mean, I've read through this thing, and there are so many places where, if you don't cross-reference back to the various different statutes, and then when I do cross-reference back to the statutes, I find difficulty in understanding what it actually means. So. If the purpose of this is to truly to raise ethical standards, then I think it should be written in a fashion that we can understand what it entails and what it requires.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Senator Johnson.
I've got a law degree and I can't understand.
Thank you.
I will tell you that this has been the result of a very painful, long process. that I participated in through the interim. The Law Commission was convened to take public input and to wrestle with a whole stakeholders group to try to figure out how to make the ethics laws more understandable and more meaningful for the public with respect to elected persons' behavior. The Law Commission provided a whole series of recommendations. Those recommendations, and correct me when I'm wrong, Ms. Johnson, those recommendations got parsed out into a whole bunch of bills. Senate Bill 10 was the one that appeared to be moving, and what I initially was going to ask, Mr. Chair, was if Ms. Johnson could just quickly go through some of the elements of all of these disparate bills, because you followed this right from the beginning, and I should have prepared you that I was going to ask this question, because it's a pretty complicated question for somebody to come up to the microphone with no advance notice. But there were a lot of things that kind of got left behind, or in this procedure to get all of this multiplicity of bills working so that you couldn't really see all the recommendations in one place at one time. And maybe, Wendy, without having an exhaustive list, you could just hit some of the recommendations that were discarded and are not in 10, and the fact that we've got this complicated reporting system in 10. It was sort of disappointing to have worked all the cavalry arrives. It was sort of disappointing to have worked all interim to find out that a lot of really good ideas are never going to see the light of day, and we end up with a bill that is pretty complicated. Everybody, in my view, wants to follow the rules, but they want to know what the rules are, and the rules need to be easily explicable to both those of us that have the privilege of holding elective office as well as the people that are frequently volunteers trying to help keep our records straight and transparent. And it's just sort of disappointing that we've gotten to this complicated point this late in the session.
Senator Johnson, and I see we're perhaps ready to respond in some way to your question, perhaps I even anticipating your question, I'm not sure. But I'm wondering, and I will certainly bow to what your wishes are on this, but I'm wondering if a more complete presentation of this type might be appropriate when we get ready to bring this bill back for work, because some of us who are not lawyers have a tendency to forget this legal gibberish until it's absolutely on the front of our plate.
Legal gibberish would be a technical term, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would be perfectly happy to take Ms. Johnson off the hot seat, because I have asked her a very complicated question, and I don't want to embarrass her by not being able to have all your materials at hand. What would really be the most meaningful, though, if Ms. Johnson would be willing to do it, is to just very succinctly lay out the concepts that the Law Commission report brought forward, and then just reference what bill they ended up in. Is that doable, Wendy, or have I asked you to spin straw into gold?
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, it's a bit of a difficult question because not all of the issues were addressed in Senate Bill 10. Some of the Law Commission's recommendations conflict with Senate Bill 10. Those that aren't addressed at all, we still have hopes that those bills will be heard. Those that conflict, we're hoping that those issues will be discussed in more detail in House Elections Ethics and Rules. And so I think a policy debate still goes on of what is the correct or the best way to handle this issue. But it's difficult to sort of say what's missing, what conflicts, because there are so many bills out there.
But Mr. Chair, Ms. Johnson just made my point. The Law Commission toiled for months with interminable meetings, and any meeting that has nine lawyers in it ought to be suspect right from the get-go. But there was a huge body of work produced with some pretty in-depth research. And what we ended up doing was sending these bits and pieces out to the winds, and I don't know at what point the policy debate can occur without having some summary of what all was discussed and recommended by the Law Commission and where it disappeared to. It really raises, colleagues, for those of you that didn't have the joy of spending your summer locked in airless rooms with lawyers, it started out with a question of how do you pay for GSPC so that it isn't dependent on a legislative appropriation out of the general fund. And then it has gone into a whole lot of other issues with very complex reporting. And it was just disappointing to have that giant work product kind of vaporize.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, just to sort of give you an overview, not of any specifics, but I think the reason, as Senator Whitsitt explained or noted, that it's complicated is that in the area of ethics, you sort of have two choices. You either restrict everything or restrict and put some exceptions. And anytime you try to define those exceptions, the law gets as complicated as what you have before you. I would say, generally speaking, the Law Commission went with allowing some things with restrictions and putting some exceptions, but relying a large part on the reporting, full disclosure, keeping the voters really in charge of checking the public, keeping the public interest in mind, and not restricting so much. It relied a lot more on just reporting. Senate Bill 10 relies a great deal on reporting, but it also has more restrictions. But when you have more restrictions, you also have that tug of war of you're restricting some behavior that others would think is appropriate. And so that's the policy issue, that's the overview of what you have to deal with on very specific issues, subsequent employment, gifts, honoraria, just salary, all these different issues that we wrestled with all summer. But there's the big policy issue of sort of almost theoretical of, do you allow with exceptions and reporting, or do you just really tighten down what is permitted, period, and perhaps sweep some things in that others would say is acceptable?
Mr. Chair, if you'll allow me to take Ms. Johnson off the hook, then I wouldn't, if I were you, I withdraw my question and request, and let's not ask you to recreate the wheel. But, I mean, in the interest of transparency, we've made these quarterly reports mandatory. We haven't discussed the issue of passing through. And if we wanted to be really serious about transparency, it's what happens to all those campaign contributions sort of behind the scenes. We're not even talking about that.
That's correct.
Anyway, I withdraw my request of Ms. Johnson.
Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. I just find it's, to follow up on what Senator Johnson just said, there's so many holes in this. You know, I mean, if we're going to do something, we should make it simple and we should make it understandable and should make it meaningful. By these rules, my understanding that, the House rules, for instance, I mean, they're not allowed to let somebody buy them lunch. But you can, as you well know, you can buy the lobbyist lunch and he can give you a check for $20,000 if he wants to. There's something ludicrous about that. You know, I mean, it's there's just massive holes in it. And I understand the political, or I probably understand part of the political ramifications, but I would come back to our original meeting of Willamette. I remember the conversation we had with Ann Boss regarding confidentiality and public records. At the end of the day, no one in the room had any idea what the law was. After reading this, and I spent quite a bit of time going through this, you know, I mean, I highlighted the whole thing. I highlighted the parts I didn't understand. It's yellow. I think we need to address this thing not in 30 or 40 or 50 pages of legal, perhaps it has to be written that way, but there should be a summary of it that we can read and understand that says what it is that we are expected to do to stay within the ethics. And I'm sure we could have a debate here all day and point out 100 different things here that aren't clear.
I think in relationship to this whole topic, it's interesting that CSG West, one of the associations that this body belongs to, and that we will be involved at some point in voting on whether we maintain these associations. But CSG West spent a year with a special, or longer, with a special committee studying this issue of ethics, and bringing quote-unquote certified smart people in to make presentations to this. My suspicion is that we have we've paid absolutely no attention to a group that we help fund to their recommendations that you know came out of that, and their first and foremost recommendation was that you don't rewrite your laws, that you instead place your emphasis on education. And I have been most apprehensive about this whole thing for the reasons that you are describing, Senator, and also for the reasons that the nature of it is perhaps more political, and heaven forbid that that happen in this building, than it is real or pragmatic type of thing. So I guess we'll take you off the hot seat then. I think you have heard, though, the questions you may want to be kind of prepared to deal with some points of that as we come back when we hear this in preparation for the work session.
Chair Jensen, I do have one question with respect to that then.
Yes.
Senator Johnson and Senator Whitsitt are both referring to campaign contribution use. This bill is regarding the primarily regarding the Government Standards and Practices Commission, and I think that's an important big picture thing to keep in mind, is that the GSPC enforces the ethics laws for all public officials, state and local. It does not enforce campaign contribution laws. That's the Secretary of State's role. Obviously, public officials who have access to campaign contributions have another source of stuff, if you will, that can be used to pay for things. That was not the focus of the Law Commission's work, although the Law Commission did recommend a bill with respect to campaign contribution use. That's not in this bill, and so I guess I need direction from you of whether you're wanting to go that way with Senate Bill 10 or
I don't want to amend
or
it
even
any
touch
more
it.
Than it is absolutely critically necessary to amend it, unless the amendment is to begin at line 1 and delete until page end, you know, which I suspect will not be treated with great favor. So we won't go there. So no, I stay with what we have.
Stay with the ethics focus.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Johnson, there is an overlap between what is required by GSPC and what is required by the Secretary of State's Election Division. And that overlap is so gray that Legislative Council has suggested to many of our caucus to just simply attach the entire C&E form to our disclosure to GSPC. There is a lack of clarity. And so to say that one is separate from the other is very difficult when our own legal counsel is telling us it is not, or it may not be, or we don't know.
Senator Johnson and Senator Whitsitt, I'm not, or Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsitt, I'm not aware of that question of attaching the CNEs to any statements filed with the GSPC. That's a new issue to me. Obviously, they do overlap, but again, the focus of this bill has been the GSPC and its enforcement. There's not an amendment to this bill, and it doesn't fit into explaining how the Law Commission's bill overlap or conflict. It's a different issue, I think.
Knowing attorneys, you probably will have more discussion for that when we get back into our other meeting on it. So we'll kind of save that issue for later.
Mr. Chair, when you expect to bring this back for discussion again?
When my very competent and able staff tell me they're ready to put the numbers in.
We're in probably the last 6 weeks of this session.
I thought we were pushing the last 6 weeks right now.
Yeah, as I said, we're going to last 6 weeks right now. This is a very complex bill that affects people in an elected office outside of this building, not just us.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's been vetted with those people or discussed with those people. I think some of us have avoided looking at this bill for lots of reasons. Okay? You may have been adverse from the point of view it's legally difficult to understand. I've just been adverse. Okay? We've had some problems with ethics over the last several years that need to be addressed. And I think the thing that I heard from you that was most interesting to me was, for those exceptions where we've had problems, to try to rewrite the whole law becomes a real nightmare. And that's kind of, I think, what you've been trying to do is, people didn't use good common sense in how they handle their ethics. A few didn't. And now we're trying to try laws to try to resolve all those issues, and they end up with something like this to try to do it. These are the A23s, is that right?
Correct.
So A23. That's a sense in my mind that there's been some real difficulty with this bill. And I appreciate that Senator Whitsitt took the time to go through it carefully. I do not understand this bill. I've been through it twice, not as carefully as he has. And I'm concerned about whether I, as a legislature, can comply with the requirements of this bill and not have to set up a legal defense fund for Alan Bates because he wasn't smart enough to figure this thing out with my busy life. Many of us have jobs outside of this legislature. It's a part-time avocation. I wonder what it's going to be like for people who have busy lives who are not in the legislature trying to comply with this. So it raises some real questions here. On the other hand, I think leaving the building without some attempt at ethics reform is not going to be good either. So I want to know how much time I've got. That's what I'm asking for here. And when I should break my leg so I'm not here for the vote.
We'll try to post it so that you have sufficient knowledge about when you need a cart or truck or something to run over your leg.
Broken leg may be less painful is the point.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Although that would violate Section 11.
Oh, there's one broken leg.
Yes.
I think, however, Senator, and both of you have made pretty eloquently the point that CSG West was making, that education of the of what the intent is and that sort of thing is far more probably important and would be far more effective than the concern I have with this as we carry these things out to what I perceive to be their ultimate illogical extreme is that we will in fact drive people away from participating in the process of government. I'm thinking about some of these. We've got this amendment here for a city mayor. Now, I don't know what the mayor makes in your fair cities, but the mayor, I think, in our city maybe makes $35 for every meeting he attends, plus some expense account to go to various and sundry types of activities that he's supposed to go to. At least by our standards here, we're getting paid an enormous amount of money compared to what many of the people who are going to be covered by these elective or these ethics rules are. I don't know. We have an ex-mayor here. He can tell us how much money mayors make.
Thank you.
That's big wages.
It is huge. There are two full-time paid mayors in the state of Oregon, Portland and Beaverton. The rest of the mayors, and LOC, if they're here, can correct me if I'm wrong, but the other, at least it used to be that mayors got anywhere from zero to about a $500 a month stipend. And some mayors, I know the mayor of Wilsonville gets a $500 a month stipend and health insurance paid by the city. So the health insurance benefit's probably worth another $400 or $500 a month. So when you consider that,
You're going to subject them to this,
right?
For $500 a month.
And I think that's one of the things, Mr. Chair, if I may, when I was mayor of Wilsonville, there was a friend of mine who was the mayor of another city that shall remain unnamed at this point, who who was had a complaint filed against him, it ended up costing him about $18,000 out of his own pocket to defend himself against the complaint. And part of that was because of the irregularities in the current statute, and part of that was because of just the methods that the complainant used to go after him. And that was all with GSPC. There was not anything done in court. So it was huge. I mean, by the time he hired a legal team and...
So you're right, Senator, you better get our legal defense fund set up here.
That makes you feel good to be setting up a legal defense fund. It makes you feel like you're a criminal before you start out.
Yeah.
And the two big issues we're not seeing discussed here are salaries for legislators being ridiculously low and the amount of campaign money flowing through these offices. It's just, those are the two elephants no one's talking about in this. Mr. Chair, I didn't realize there was a mayor here that would be affected by this. Would he be willing to come forward and just give us a quick idea of what it means to him?
I didn't. I shut him down yesterday. I don't plan to do it 2 days in a row.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities. I am not, in point of fact, a mayor. I just work for them. When Senate Bill 10 was in front of Senate Rules, we had worked long and hard. We were also represented by our executive director and our legal counsel on the Law Commission when this was drafted. We do have some concerns, but we are willing to be cooperative, and we understand the issues that precipitated this legislation. We share the concerns of Senator Johnson, and that we want something that's simple to understand. We're still digesting. We've spent a long time digesting this. We think we're getting closer to that. But we also appreciate that we need to pitch in on this as well.
The mayor I was referring to was the former mayor.
Former mayor, okay.
From Wilsonville.
Question. Do you think this is too complex for people who are holding jobs that are holding positions? I shouldn't say they're really. You run for election, you get elected, but that's really more of a voluntary position than anything else. And you put this burden on them. Do you think it will keep people from deciding to run for those positions?
Chair Jensen, Senator Bates, one of the things the league has been addressing is training for our mayors. We're not so much concerned that we're not going to find folks to run for mayor. Our concern is that we would find people who would be willing to serve on planning commissions, volunteer as our reserve police officers, serve on budget committees and other areas that would be subjected to this.
Does this bill open them up to penalties, civil penalties, substantial civil penalties from GSPC?
I believe, Chair Jensen, Senator Bates, I believe it would.
Senator Johnson.
Piling onto this a little bit, Mr. Winkles, I just would be curious about your perception of what the public's interest in ethics reform is. Do you think the public sees the legislature as being subject to one set of ethical issues and, frankly, ethical lapses, and local electeds, all 200 and how many hundred thousand of them there are, as maybe being subject to appropriate but different ethics rules? Let me ask my question better. During the Law Commission debate and the other committee debates that I participated in on Senate Bill 10, there has been the desire among some colleagues to sweep in every person who's elected. And I'm trying to discern whether or not there is a public expectation of good ethics from everybody, but a higher degree of public scrutiny on the legislature, particularly given some of the ethical lapses that have occurred here previously.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, in my career, I have worked for federally elected officials, state elected officials, and I'm now employed by locally elected officials. I believe that the public expects high ethical standards from every local level of government. I don't believe that they expect a different standard from city officials as they do federally and state electeds.
Mr. Chair,
I'm understanding your question correctly.
You haven't, because I would agree with you that everyone expects high ethical standards from people that hold positions of public trust. My question to you is, would it be, what's your perception of how the public would respond to a set of ethics rules that would apply to the legislature, a set of ethics rules that might speak to the different aspects of basically volunteer mayors in little tiny cities? Do all 270,000 elected officials in this state have to subscribe to the same set of rules? I'm not asking about high ethical standards, because I think that ought to be the sine qua non. But my question is, what's your, having served three types of elected officials, if the legislature had a set of rules that were clear and understandable but might not apply to your locally elected mayors and planning commission folks, bad thing, good thing?
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, I think that would be a good thing. I think that the potential for ethical lapse for lack of a better word, damage vary depending on elected office, and rules that would be appropriate to the legislature may not necessarily apply to the director of the Planning Commission.
One more follow-up, Mr. Chair. Conversely, I think you would not disagree that the largest number of complaints that government standards and practices handle emanate not from the legislature, but from local government.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, off the top of my head, I believe the number for the percentage of cases is 41% from local governments.
I believed it was a little higher. I'd love to have clarification, Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson, I will clarify that with you. This is off the top of my head.
Sitting right behind you and may know the number. He's the chair.
And we're going to shut this off at this particular point and move on to our other agendas, because we're not going any further with it today anyway.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, in the last year that we kept statistics, it was 87% that came from local jurisdictions as opposed to state government. And state government includes the...
We need to identify... I'm sorry, for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Ron Burson. I'm the Executive Director for Government Standards and Practices Commission. And the amount from the last year that we kept track, last full year, was 87% for local jurisdictions as opposed to state government, which the legislature would be part of the state government percentage.
Mr. Chair.
Chair, I know I'm pushing this, but could I ask one question?
Oh, but
Mr. Burson,
course.
Please.
Yeah.
Mr. Burson, the committee amendments would allow GSPC to issue a letter of reprimand, explanation of education. A letter of reprimand, explanation, or education under certain circumstances. Would you be willing to put on the record what your perception of how GSPC would interpret that?
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsitt, currently the statute requires the GSPC, when they find a violation, to have a civil penalty up to $1,000. And through the discussions, I believe with the Law Commission also, but with Senator Beltan, there was a discussion about allowing the GSPC to have an additional tool to be able to simply educate someone with maybe some of the examples that we've talked about here, where a new public official comes in, they make an error, there wasn't a malice in that error, it was a minor infraction, there really wasn't any financial harm to Oregonians, in other words, they didn't take any public funds, it was just simply, they made an error. And we would be able to, instead of having to impose even a small civil penalty of $50 or $100, we could actually give them a letter of It started out as a letter of reprimand, but I think as the time went on, the definition expanded to try to move over towards that education side, where we actually send out a letter and trying to educate the person to tell them, you know, this is the action that we have seen that has taken place. This is where you have violated statute, and this is how we can correct it in the future. And so instead of just having to have that monetary penalty every single time, it gives the GSBC a chance to use a different tool. And you know, I just wanted to point out there are changes in this bill here as the other bills that are with the Law Commission, but the basic premise of ethics has still stayed the same. Yes, we've changed the amounts of civil penalty. We've gone from zero now, in other words, a letter of reprimand up to $5,000. We've changed that, but there's always been some type of sanction against a person who does this. There's always been gift limitations. In the current statute, there are gift limitations. In this bill, there's a different gift limitation. There's a gift limitation of bringing it down to $50 as opposed to a current limitation of $100. There are still conflicts of interest requirements for potential and actual conflicts of interest that you have to disclose. Those are in current statute. So all these people that we've talked about that are out there, there won't be any new people that are subject to ethics laws with Senate Bill 10. There'll still be the same amount of people that are subject to the ethics laws, and the same premise around ethics, conflicts of interest, financial gain from your position. It's just simply changing the amount and like I say, some of the tools to be able to correct that behavior.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, may I ask one question that I think would be a very short answer?
Okay, Senator, Representative Carmel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ron, the issue of contributions came up and using our elected officials using their PACs. Is there anything in here that would create a violation if a, for example, if a legislator used their PAC money for something to support their office, paying staff, buying supplies, buying dinners for lobbyists, which of course we don't do very often, and those sorts of things? Is there anything in here that would preclude that?
Chair Jensen, Representative Kremel, I just want to ask a clarifying question. You're talking about your personal PCC, personal or
my personal PAC.
Principal Campaign Committee? Yeah. No, there's nothing in this to keep you from doing it.
We're going to close the public hearing on this, and we will revisit it later on. And before we get there, we would want to make sure we remind the committee that we're not going to be a policy committee that rewrites this particular legislation.
Thank you.
The chair would entertain motions when we get there, perhaps about funding. But
talk about the money, right?
Yeah. No. Keep it. And we are back, and we're going to open then the public hearing on our legislative agencies and the Legislative Administrative Committee. And we've been somewhat immersed in that discussion now for a couple of sessions, and I see Mr. Henderson has brought with him a whole packet of goodies for us to muse over. Do you have anything for Teresa before we begin?
We'll just go ahead.
Go for it.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, Dave Henderson, Legislative Administrator. Where we left off yesterday, there were four areas yet to be addressed, each of which should be, I think, relatively short. We wanted to talk yet about special session preparations in the event of the WINGS project moving forward, our communications plan for the project, the decision-making and issue resolution process, and then finally the long-term planning for the entire capital. Perhaps in the absence of a chair,
I have been appointed as the substitute.
Oh, Chair Kremel.
You can look this way.
Yes, sir, I shall. There is a question that I do want to address to the committee, and maybe it's best put out there when more of the committee members are back, but there was some discussion yesterday about the document that Senator Bates presented, and he had asked the members of the committee to get back to him about their feelings on that. So at some point, I would ask direction of the committee as to if they like that approach, then I will work with Senator Bates to implement that. So I would put that out there as something to be resolved.
Yeah, I think let's probably hold that question for, especially when the chair is back.
Okay.
I don't want to be making any big decisions here. That's out of my...
I need to hear from the other members of the committee, too.
Yeah.
This is really premature today. Chair Cromwell, do you know what's going on the floor? Right. Well, I mean, what's the plan? You got people coming and going. Are we going to have to be called? Is it going to call the House or caucus or...
I'm not real sure. I know that we are having floor session right now, and so probably we will have House members potentially in and out if they're carrying a bill and that sort of thing. And of course, if we do get called in for a call, then you know, but that'll be to the real chair. We all get to go.
That everything else is.
On hold. And so, Mr. Chair, Dave was just asking about the document that Senator Bates had put out yesterday, and I suggested that to get any direction on that, to wait until you were here to give him any kind of... And, Dave, maybe you'd want to go ahead and restate your question, if it's all right with the Chair, so that he can... understand
certainly
what I'm talking about.
Certainly. Some of the points I'm going to address today are directly related to the document that Senator Bates shared with the committee yesterday. And what I'm looking for from the committee at some point is an indication of the committee's desire as to following that procedure that he has outlined in his document. So I pose that as something that I would like direction on from the committee at some point so that we know how to proceed on that.
The chair, not being unappreciative of Senator Bates' recommendation, but quite frankly, Senator, I haven't had a chance to work amongst members enough to be able to respond, I guess, to that.
I appreciate that. I don't think anybody has. We've been, the last 24 hours for most of us, been pretty tough. And my idea of putting that out was to give you a couple of days to look at, digest it, and write comments. I've got a couple comments back so far, and I would appreciate more comments coming back to see if this is something that would get us back on track to getting the wings done as we are planning to, and start a better process for communication, better process for what those wings look like immediately, and long-term be working towards. And I say long-term, I'm not talking 2 or 3 years. We're talking February coming up here. Long-term, lay out a master plan for the Capitol so we really know where we're going and have some input in getting that done. And the input can't be, I don't believe it can be 91 people. It's going to have to be a small work group that really sits down and then talks to other people and brings it back in. But we haven't got a lot of time here if we're going to move this forward. And so I'm just waiting for a little more feedback from a couple of people. My thought is once I get feedback from the committee, I take it to the chair. The chair then takes it to the co-chairs, see if it's something we want to do. And if the chair agrees, the co-chairs agree, and this committee agrees, and it's maybe something we put in place and get rolling on.
Okay.
But this is ground level right now.
Okay.
We have to have buy-in from a committee first, the chair of that committee, and then moving forward from there. So this is pretty low right now.
Okay.
And we have to have people have an opportunity to digest and think about this proposal, and I'm hoping that we can get back to it early next week, maybe Monday or Tuesday. Would that be,
that'd be
adequate?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Where we stopped yesterday was we were just about to address preparation for special session in February of 2008. Under the scenario that we are working under right now, we would have 9 hearing rooms available for use during the special session. They would be hearing rooms A through F, 343, 357, and 50. The renovation project does not affect those spaces, so those 9 hearing rooms would be available. Based on our discussions, with the presiding officers, their feeling was that there will be active committee meetings taking place during that session, and there needs to be an adequate amount of space. So we've got those 9 hearing rooms set aside. In addition to that, we will set aside some space. You'll recall that yesterday we talked about relocating fiscal council revenue off-site during the renovation project. We will identify space in the Capitol so that staff from those offices will have a base to work out of when they are here, because they are clearly working with committees on a regular basis. So there would be workstations here in the building for a number of their staff to work out of during that time. We will establish, and we have already consulted with DAS about renting vehicles to run a messenger service from whatever remote locations we end up with here to the Capitol. In the event that it is not within walking distance, we recognize that particularly during session, there's frequent distribution of paperwork and things of that nature. So we're working to establish that messenger service right now. Moving on to communications, it is our anticipation that we will generate weekly status reports that will be shared with all 90 legislators, all the affected staff people, and it will be a very large distribution list that we will share that information with to let folks know where we are on the progress of the project. We are also working right now to establish a website that would be a direct link from the legislative homepage so that people could go to that site, and it is even anticipated that we will be able to post photographs and perhaps even video to that website so that folks from outlying areas such as Klamath Falls or other areas would be able to have the opportunity to go on and take a look and see what's going on with the project. We would schedule regular tours. This is something we learned because we had the opportunity, as DPSST was constructing their facility here in Salem. They conducted numerous regular tours for affected stakeholders and interested parties. So it would be our anticipation that throughout the progress of the project, and particularly during the special session, we would be available and the contractors would be available to show folks what's going on and the progress that we're making. Last and certainly not least is we will have regular meetings of the stakeholders, and that means representatives of the legislators, all the legislative offices, the other offices in the building, so that we can share information for them to disseminate and we can gather information at those meetings. The next item on my list does relate to the document that Senator Bates gave out, so I'll just say that one of the issues that we've known needs to be resolved, and he has proposed one way to resolve that, is that we need to have a designated group that has the authority to make decisions on the project. Whether that be the group as outlined by Senator Bates or the Legislative Administration Committee or whatever group that is, we need that so that we can work with that group and not have the project bogged down because of having to go through layer and layer and layer of decision-making process. So we would ask for the input of this committee and the direction of the presiding officers on what group that could be. And we certainly do feel that representation by staff people among that group is appropriate so that their interests are expressed during the process. The last item on my list is also related to Senator Bates' document, and that is long-term planning. We clearly need to do a better job of long-term planning for the entire building, and it would be our hope to enter into a process right now to pull together a number of different items that have been looked at over the course of the last 10 or 12 or 15 or even 20 years, but have never been brought together into a cohesive, comprehensive plan for the building. I can give you 2 very good examples of what I'm talking about. Following the spring break quake in 1993, a consulting firm was brought in to look at seismic upgrade to the building. They presented a plan at that time which was a total of about $90 million of seismic upgrades to the Capitol, and frankly that plan has sat on the shelf since that time. Lack of funding, lack of an imminent earthquake, I think is driving that. Another issue that has come up a number of years ago was very strong concerns about the safety of the crossing of Court Street in front of the Capitol. And we worked with a consultant at that time to work on a plan that has again been put on the shelf, but it is a comprehensive plan to address the safety of the crosswalk and to tie the Capitol to the Capitol Mall, which was always the intention. When the underground parking was developed across the street, there was a long-range plan to take some of the elements of that project and bring them across the street so that there was a natural tie together of the two areas. That, because of budget issues at the time of the underground parking, did not move forward. But we've got a plan that incorporates that and a number of security aspects for the building itself to make the Capitol less susceptible to any kind of terrorist activity or any kind of thing that could take place. So those are just two examples. You've also heard from Senator Atkinson yesterday about issues in the old portion of the Capitol that do need to be addressed. So we are fully supportive of an organized process to put together a long-term plan addressing Senator Bates' concern and his point that we need to be looking 30, 40, 50 years down the road and what this building will look like at that time. So we are fully supportive of the concept that he's laid out if that's the direction that the committee would like to go. Two things to close a couple of issues that came up yesterday that were very good points. We have, since the meeting yesterday, contacted the gentleman in Washington State who is their Capitol Facilities manager, and we have arranged with him to come to Salem and review our planning process, where we are in the entire process, to offer his input based on the process that they went through with the Washington State Capitol following the earthquake up there and all of the renovation that they did. So he will be here on Monday for us to have a discussion with him. I've also contacted a colleague of mine in Florida that I know oversaw a renovation project in the Florida Capitol. So I've not yet made direct contact, but we've exchanged emails, so I will be following up with him. And last but not least, we have now developed a draft survey to go to legislators to assess their needs for the interim, as far as personal office space, staff office space, office equipment, and things of that nature. It's not finalized yet, but we've got it in draft form, and hopefully within the next couple of days we'll be able to distribute that and solicit input from all 90 legislators.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, given that I have been the grumpiest about this, today is like a breath of fresh air. This is the kind of direction. I'm just sorry that it had to get so ugly to get here and have such a corrosive effect on people's confidence up to this point. But this is exactly the kind of inclusive, let's go ask some questions, let's not just talk in an echo chamber. The only piece that's missing for me, and I would be happy to offer a recommendation, is that maybe we get a third-party private sector person, big engineering firm, and I'm thinking specifically of David Evans and Associates. I happen to make the acquaintance of the CEO through his participation in the Lewis and Clark activities. He just happens to be a direct lineal descendant of one of the members of the Corps of Discovery. He's somebody's great-great, I don't know how many greats, grandson. And David Evans and Associates, largely pro bono, it's Ken Weitzman is his name. He took a largely pro bono role in helping to develop a lot of the engineering around the Lewis and Clark activities, particularly the Fort to the Sea Trail. My point in saying that is that DEA is a good corporate citizen, and I think that they're used to managing these large, complicated projects that are expensive with lots of moving parts. And it might be a good idea to call him up and say, just for the good of the order, because you're a great Oregonian, how would you like to send a multidisciplinary team down to sit in on the meeting with the guy from Florida? And let's take a little private sector foray through this plan and see if they can make recommendations. I'd be happy to facilitate that contact. But, Mr. Henderson, this is the kind of more energized, outside-the-box thinking that I think is going to help restore confidence to some of us that we're beginning, as much as we were committed to the wings and the need to refurbish this great lady of a building, Our hands were slipping out of yours. I'm beginning to feel as though maybe we got something to talk about again.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, absolutely. We'll make contact with them and see about their availability to come down. In a related vein, I believe you referred Barbara Sidway to me about a month or 6 weeks ago, and I had a brief conversation with her. She also has contact with a gentleman in Portland who is a consultant on historic property renovations and things of that nature. So I've had a conversation with him, and based on his information, he's willing to come down and do some pro bono work as well. So that may be another thing that we could do to bring some other folks to the table who can participate.
Cool. That's great.
Senator Bates and then Representative Carmel.
Thank you. Dave, thanks for your support in this. I believe we can get this done, but we've got to really move on it. We're in the middle of May now. We are going to be cutting budgets the next 4 weeks, and this needs to be in the budget if we're going to get there. I appreciate the work you've done on this and supporting this. I'm asking the committee to look at this in the next few days and get back to me on it. I'll get back to the chair, and we'll try to get this done and the immediate steps done within the next week or so. Because if we don't, I think we'll lose it, and I don't want to lose this. But at the same time, we'll tie the long-term planning into it. And I'm looking forward to hearing back from committee members what they think of this, whether it's something that they think they can support or not, and what changes they need to make to it. So I'm really looking for some committee input from the people sitting around this table right now. And then, Dave, I expect that you and I will need to sit down probably Monday afternoon, Tuesday afternoon, and wrap this thing up and get it rolling. Okay?
Very good.
We just haven't got a lot of time. But I think we're going to gain. I've sensed out some other people, and the support seems to be growing for this kind of a process to get in place quickly, move it forward, and get it done. Okay?
Very good. Yes, sir.
And I've actually had some people, some of the back of envelope things of what this place might look like. It's been kind of interesting. There are some big visionaries around here. It was nice to see it.
That's good.
Okay.
That's good.
Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave, with regards to the long-term planning and to a certain extent even the short-term planning, have you been engaging the Capital Foundation in this as well?
Chair Jensen, Representative Crummell, the Capital Foundation gets regular updates on where we are in the process, and they have offered to play whatever role would be helpful, whether that be lobbying legislators or being a speakers bureau, if you will, to share information with people and organizations outside of the Capitol. So we are coordinating with the foundation, yes.
Okay, because I, Mr. Chair, they are just a tremendous, tremendously enthusiastic group, and most of them have. Between the members, there's probably, 2,000 years of experience in this building. It's absolutely incredible. But I think having them as a resource in this project is extremely important.
Okay. Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to say that I would not portray my hand as pulling away from yours on this project, because it's one that we need to do, and I want to get going on it. I am pleased to see that we're making some progress in alleviating concerns and maybe kind of coordinating a little bit better on it. But I'm there on the project. We need to do it.
Thank you.
One last comment, Chair. I failed to mention this. I would especially like, if you're supportive of this type of a plan going forward, not only your recommendations for how we do it, but I've left the House side sort of blank on suggestions. And we made suggestions about the Senate, who the staffers would be and who the senators would be, just suggestions on our side. They may not be the final ones. But I felt it was really stepping over the edge to suggest anything to the House. And so suggestions coming back from you about who those members might be, who the staffers might be, would be really helpful, and I'd appreciate your input.
Okay. Okay. We're done.